It has been a journey that really started minutes after the end of Super Bowl 58. Immediate discussion between Patrick Mahomes and other Chiefs about trying to do something that had never been done before and win back-to-back-to-back Super Bowls. And here we are in New Orleans to do just that. And, of course, this Defending the Kingdom episode, like them all, brought to you by your best friends at Ticketmaster. And, yeah, a lot of you have been busy using Ticketmaster to try to find tickets to this game.
It's Samaje Perine at the 30. First down! I love you, Samaje Perine!
Hi, everyone. I'm Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs, along with senior team reporter Matt McMullen. And, yes, we are here just off Canal Street, famous Canal Street here in New Orleans, the Crescent City, the Big Easy, really an interesting, historic city that the Chiefs are trying to make history here and to win Super Bowl 59.
And this happens every single Super Bowl week, which on its own is a fun thing to say because we've done this a few times.
Think about
now.
What you just said.
I know. I have to maintain the perspective. But we've been here for less than 48 hours, and it feels like we've been here for a month with all the stuff that goes on and all the people that are here and all the craziness and kind of sifting through it all. But, yeah, it should be a great week. And, again, it's pretty cool that we're here.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. We mentioned, I mean, last night was crazy, but it's always crazy. And it had its own craziness, but it was really cool. You and I got a chance to walk in with the team.
Yeah.
Which made it more special than any of the other opening nights. But it was a feeling that I really haven't had before of seeing those guys walk in to the Superdome. And just the reception, but the look on those our guys' faces. And I had a chance to talk to DeAndre Hopkins. I said, you're getting to make this walk. And you saw what he posted on social, which was really cool, about keeping dreams alive. He came from a small town in South Carolina, you know, a single parent, and all the reasons not to make it. And I just told him, I said, you're making this walk, but you helped us get here. And then I saw Kareem Hunt, same discussion. You're making this walk, but we wouldn't be here without you. And so it was a moment that was really cool.
It's kind of like the opening ceremony of the Olympics. And what I like about it is we're going to talk all about like mitigating distractions and staying focused and locking in on this football game, because that's why we're here, is to play and to win a football game. But the beauty of opening night, even though it's like very silly on the surface, is it lets the guys for a couple hours embrace and enjoy the idea that they're at the Super Bowl. And to reflect on how cool it is that they're all here together and their journeys have all led to this point. And for some guys like Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, they're trying to make history and trying to get their fourth ring. But you're right. For guys like DeAndre Hopkins or Hollywood Brown, so many others, this is the culmination of a lifelong dream. And it's so cool. You're at the Super Bowl. And for guys like D-Hop, I mean, you've played a decade in the NFL, you've been at the very top of your profession, but you've never had a chance to do this, and now you're here. And so, yeah, opening night's cool because you get to walk out with the team, the whole thing is announced, people are yelling and screaming, you get to talk to media from all over the world. And while on one end, sure, that's, you know, a distraction, on the other, for a couple of hours, it's pretty cool that the guys get to fully embrace being at the Super Bowl.
Which is why I retweeted what D-Hop put on social, because I thought, no, it is striking right to the center of his heart, the very thing we're talking about, and we hope that he would feel. He's feeling it. Same with Kareem Hunt. The day that he was dismissed from the team and drove out of our facility, who thought that he would be here now? And, again, we wouldn't be here without him.
No.
And so
definitely not.
It's just this cool two-way conduit that I sensed and felt last night, again, of all the hoopla and the craziness. There was that moment that I'll never forget that makes this experience at Super Bowl 59 here in New Orleans unique. Okay, New Orleans, famous city. At one time, it was one of the world's richest cities, and at one time, the world's busiest port. When you go back to the 1700s and 1800s, as North America was developing, this was the connection of North America to the world, really. And so fascinating in the fact that this, we talked about it, it's almost like its own country, the fact that there's all of this collision of cultures here.
What Louisiana food have you had so far?
You know, I like Cajun food.
Okay.
And so already had jambalaya, which is really good.
Perfect.
And then kind of a Cajun flavored steak that was really good. I mean, the food here is superb.
I had something called seafood au gratin. So it was like cheesy potatoes with like clams and shrimp and all kinds and crab and stuff in it. It was amazing. One of our producers, who has never been here before, Max, said he wanted to try a bignet It's a big, it's a beignet.
He went to Kentucky to school. Okay.
He wanted to.
Give me one of them there big nits. I'll take three big nits with some of that white sauce on it.
But we got to get one of those at some point. Yeah. But yeah, I love seafood. Love love Cajun food. It's been good so far.
Beignets are the best.
Yeah, they are.
And a beignet in Jackson Square is a must here in New Orleans. But speaking of New Orleans, at one point, and still is in many ways, one of the most important cities in the world. Let's travel around the world.
Let's do it. I love how we're getting like all the sounds around us too. We're like on the fifth or sixth floor of our hotel outside, if you're just listening. And everything from Canal Street, like all the sirens, and there's a helicopter flying over, and hopefully you feel like you're here in New Orleans with us.
Do you want a little Canal Street trivia here, right?
Okay.
This is where the term Dixie originated.
Really?
Right. And then the other side of Canal Street was French.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the French hung out. And then most of the English-speaking people were on this side of Canal Street,
mm-hmm.
and there was this confusion over currency. New Orleans made its own currency called Dixies.
Really?
Yeah, because all these people were coming in that were merchant ships, and they would come in here, but it was all this collision of currency. They go, all right, so if you came here, New Orleans was its own little country, you had to have Dixies.
Interesting. It does feel like its own like.
And Canal
thing
Street
still.
It was the dividing line.
Interesting. Okay, that makes sense.
Right there. I mean, you're looking at the Sheraton, that was French.
Because on the other side of Canal Street, like on the side that we're on, that's where all the French Quarter is and everything, right?
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I got stuck in our rental car in the French Quarter yesterday, just driving around in circles. Difficult to drive around the good old French Quarter. But hey, I made it back. So here we are. Okay, let's go around the world. Just five today, because we need to get to some conversation about the game. But we have lots more in the hopper, don't worry.
For the fifth Super Bowl championship in franchise history.
Not trying to make it so obvious, but that's
okay.
What I'm going for
all
here.
Right.
So, heard from our friend Gary Pugh. You know Gary,
yeah.
Obviously. So, Gary wanted to shout out his friend Joe Amoris. Gary coached him years ago. He's a huge Chiefs fan living out in L.A. So, shout out to you, Joe. Thanks for listening. We met Carmella and her entire family from Wichita
goodness.
In the hotel yesterday. There was like 30 of them. They drove 11 hours from Wichita to be here. And they're not staying for the game. They just came down here for a couple of days to experience New Orleans and to, you know, kind of experience the Chiefs being here in New Orleans. So thanks for saying hi, everybody.
The joy they had
yeah.
was a highlight of a time here to see that entire family have that much happiness being here.
And it worked out, too, because I saw them at opening night where they were kind of like in the corner, and they were shouting and yelling and saying hi, and they were hoping a few players could come over. And, I mean, the players are so busy at opening night, like I don't have that kind of power. But the universe was helping me out because then a bunch of guys came over and signed a bunch of autographs for them. So it was great. So anyway, it's great meeting you all. Thanks for saying hi. Jeremy is right here in New Orleans. Grew up in Manhattan, though, and went to K-State. Grew up listening to you. And he was a ball boy at Bramlage as a fourth grader.
Wow.
Kind of cool.
What's he do down here?
Oh, gosh. He probably wrote it in his note. I didn't catch it.
Probably an engineer of some sort.
Yeah. Let us know, Jeremy.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's a K-Stater.
Cool.
Alicia is listening from Singapore, but originally from Bentley, Kansas. Went to Halstead High School.
The Dragons.
Dragons. Yeah, there we go. There's a lot of dragons I've noticed in
Way
Kansas.
Way too many dragons.
Yeah.
How many dragons are running around Kansas? Have you seen any dragons in Kansas?
Not many. No. What's the museum in Hayes?
The Sternberg Museum.
Do they have any dragon fossils there? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And lastly, David is in Taipei, Taiwan, but grew up in Leavenworth. Went to Immaculata High School.
Immaculata.
Immaculata High School.
The Fighting Raiders of Immaculata are no more.
I saw that on Wikipedia. Yeah,
I
it's
know.
Too bad.
They were a force at one time. The Green and White Raiders. They were a force, but shut down. Now they've scattered to schools all over the kingdom.
Well, David is an alumni and gone but not forgotten, Immaculata. That's all
forever.
I got today.
Keep Raider pride, buddy. Never lose it. So in this episode.
Only instance you can say that on a Chiefs podcast, huh?
Yeah, let me rethink that. There's a lot of Raiders in Kansas, too.
Yeah.
More than you would think. But anyway, sorry about that one, but Immaculata. We're going to focus just on the remaining minutes of this podcast and looking at one side of the ball. And then we're going to do, on Thursday, we're going to get post another one. But talk about the Philadelphia offense, which has been an interesting story this year. They've made their own history against the Chiefs defense. But I really think when people want to compare Super Bowl 57 Eagles to the Super Bowl 59 Eagles, and it's really, if you look at it and do a scuba dive into it, they're a very different team than they were just 2 years ago. And there's the Eagle spies that are hanging,
chopper
on,
right
hanging
overhead.
Every word.
Before we started
fly,
shooting,
Eagles, fly.
I was saying how quiet it was. Like, man, this is perfect. It's so quiet. And as soon as we start shooting, we have like helicopters flying over.
You jinxed the no-hitter.
Blow horns.
Guys, we haven't given up a hit for 8 innings.
You wouldn't have given up a hit yet.
That's it's out of here.
That's on me.
A solo home run, we lose 1-0. Okay. But interesting study just because of the explosion, basically, of Saquon Barkley. I mean, yeah, that's been a saga of Hard Knocks draft time where the New York Giants were exposed of, like, we're not going to pay him. And then he ends up going to the Eagles, like the worst thing ever for them. But then Saquon's gone to another level with this team. And the fact that they changed the way their approach. If you look at the targets to A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith, you're seeing those reduced. Jalen Hurts has kind of adjusted his game somewhat, but it's really centered around and I'll say this. Coaches all across the NFL or colleges really will say you can't win without passing the football. Mm. You've got to pass the ball. You pass to run, run helps, but I've got to pass the ball to win. The Eagles are so explosive in the run game, they're getting passing game chunks with Saquon Barkley runs. And that's made them unique in the fact that they're so good in the run game that they're in this game because of it. 14 regular season wins, 3 postseason wins. Barkley, 7 runs of 60 yards or more for touchdowns. That's an all-time NFL record.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, these guys play football like teams in the 80s and 90s did, and they do it really successfully. I was curious about the differences between this year's Eagles and the Eagles we saw in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. And one really general way of looking at it is the Eagles are 29th in passing yards per game this year. Back in 2022, they were 9th in the NFL in passing yards per game. So they threw the ball a whole lot more the last time we saw them in the Super Bowl. But to your point, they don't really throw the ball a whole lot now because they don't really need to. I mean, they still have a lot of talent. They still have Devontae Smith, still have A.J. Brown, still have Dallas Goedert. But, yeah, Saquon has just been a revelation for these guys. He's the 9th player in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season. And didn't Derrick Henry do it a couple years ago?
He did.
I thought Henry would be the last one to ever do it just because the way the league is gone, like, it just doesn't really happen anymore where you have one guy who's your bell cow and getting the ball that much because you need a lot of carries to rush for 2,000 yards. But he's been incredible, and it's his explosiveness that we've seen from him this year that's made him so good and made him such a fixture in this Eagles offense. A couple numbers
on that.
And
can I add this to tag your point?
Yeah.
This is what makes the Eagles unique. You mentioned 29th in passing. They're only the second team in Super Bowl history to make the Super Bowl being in the bottom 5 in passing. The other was the 82 Dolphins, and that's a strike year. So
Wow. This
tells you how unique the Philadelphia Eagles are right here on the card of getting to this game.
But you're right, because they throw the ball, or teams in the NFL throw the ball to get big explosive chunk plays, and the Eagles get that with their run game. They had 46 runs, Saquon specifically, of 10 or more yards this year, most in the NFL. 42% of his rushing yards this season came on runs of at least 15 yards. Think about that. So a lot of runs of double-digit yardage. And he has 3 runs of 60-plus this postseason. I mean, and it's just a backbreaker when that happens. Now, the good news for the Chiefs, and we can dive into this going up against a player like Saquon, is they have, under Steve Spagnuolo, been really good against the run over the course of Spagnuolo's time here, and specifically this season. The Chiefs are one of just 3 teams in the NFL this year to not allow a single running back to go over 100 yards. And I think a couple weeks ago we talked about there's only one 100-yard rusher against the Chiefs this year. It was Lamar Jackson way back in week 1. And we faced a lot of good running backs. So faced Derrick Henry this year. He finished 2nd in the NFL in rushing yards. He averaged 117 rushing yards per game, just 46 rushing yards against the Chiefs. Bijan Robinson finished 3rd in the NFL in rushing yards this year, averaged 89 rushing yards per game, just 31 against the Chiefs. Chuba Hubbard, 8th in the NFL in rushing yards, averaged 81, just 58 against the Chiefs. And Bucky Irving, kind of surprising, Bucky Irving was 10th in the NFL in rushing yards this year. But he averaged 69 rushing yards per game, just 24 against the Chiefs. So the good news for Kansas City going into this game is, yes, Saquon is a huge test and challenge. No one's really been able to stop him all year long. But the Chiefs have been uniquely good at stopping opposing running backs and really good ones across the NFL. One last challenge here in Saquon to hopefully win the Super Bowl.
So if you do a dive, I remember I met the 7 60-plus yard touchdowns NFL record. Here's what's interesting about those. 4 of those 7 were against the Rams.
Wow.
when you count the regular season, they played them in the regular season, and, of course, in the game in the divisional playoff victory, 4 of the 7 against the Rams, 2 against the Commanders, 1 in the regular season, 1 in the postseason, and then another one against the Saints. But 6 of the 7 are against 2 opponents. Now, he's got some other 50s in there, right? There's a long one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But the point is, he did those against 2 squads. All right. The other thing to take into account, you look at what Spags does in the run game, and he emphasizes it, the fact that it's track the hip, hope, you know, build the wall, track the hip.
And hold the edge.
Hold the edge.
Yep.
And the Chiefs have done that very well. But to have 8 defensive linemen that can rotate and you do not fall off is very rare in this day and age in the National Football League with the salary cap. If you think of the guys that are on there and the guys that do the dirty work, the Derek Nottis, you know, Felix Anudike Uzama, Turk Wharton to some extent, Mike Pinnell's 2 playoff seasons in a row, he's been outstanding. He was awesome in the Buffalo game.
Yeah, it
Big
was.
Mike was big time. So you got 4 guys on the inside. We know about Chris. We know about Karloftis, Mike Danett. There's 8 guys that rotate, and you don't fall off the cliff when you rotate those 8 guys. Then you have linebackers who are tacklers, and you have defensive backs who are tacklers. I would venture to say the Chiefs are the best tackling team in the NFL at all 3 levels. But to have an 8-man defensive line rotation is unheard of in this day and age in the NFL.
And the corners who can tackle is a big part of it, too. Because I think if you look at some of these explosive Saquon runs, a lot of them are outside the tackle box, and he's, like, untouched. Just gets up the field untouched and then 60 yards to the end zone. If you look closely, there are some corners making business decisions on these explosive Saquon runs. The good news for the Chiefs is Trent McDuffie, Jalen Watson, all the corners in this DB room, they tackle, and they enjoy the process of tackling and the challenge of tackling. And a lot of corners around the NFL just aren't like that. And it's kind of like a prerequisite and a requirement to play in Spags defense. And we've asked our guys about it. They're like, yeah, like there's no question. Like you have to tackle as a corner if you want to be a contributor on Spags defense. And that's a big deal going into this game because you can't have missed tackles against these guys. You can't have business decisions against these guys because Saquon, he is the engine that makes the whole Philadelphia offense go. These guys lead the NFL in time of possession, and we're going to talk about the defense later this week, but it all works in tandem where if they are possessing the ball, and it's not just the explosive runs, if they're getting first down after first down after first down and going 12 plays, 8-minute drive, well, that's taking away a possession from you in the long run, and that helps their defense. So in this game for Saquon, limit the explosive runs.
Yep.
But also limit them being on the field for an eternity, because that's what they do. They milk the clock. They run these big, long drives with 12, 13 plays, and Saquon's the key to it all. So for our entire defense, and I'm with you on the rotation of the defensive front, fresh legs, tackle. Do not miss tackles. And if he's outside the tackle box, the corners are going to meet Saquon, hopefully, at the line of scrimmage.
The Chiefs have only given up 350-plus runs in 4 seasons. They've only given up 6 in 6 seasons. So the long run really is a rarity against the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't say that to fire up the Eagles. I'm just telling you that is the stat that's there. Now, the Eagles offensive line, we'll wrap things up here, but the Eagle offensive line is good. You look at Lane Johnson at right tackle, 6-time Pro Bowler. Mailata, who is like a Samoan rugby player, is just a giant of a beast.
And a great singer, too.
Great singer. Landon Dickerson is at guard. But this group does miss Jason Kelce.
Yeah.
They do. Now, let's be honest. They got Juergens and Beatrice, Nebraska, right in the middle of the Chiefs' kingdom.
Not Beatrice.
Not Beatrice. It's Beatrice, Nebraska, home of the Orange Men, or the Lady O.
Okay.
That's what we call them in Beatrice, just north of Marysville, Kansas. Great community. And Juergens, who's Nebraska Cornhusker, is the center on this team, if healthy. But this is a good offensive line. But we also talked about the defensive front for the Chiefs. If there is a team built to limit Barkley to singles and doubles and not hit home runs, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't say that for bulletin board material, but if we're going to talk facts, we talk facts.
If the number one priority is to stop Barkley, the number two priority then is to get pressure on Hurts. And that's how this all works in tandem together. And the Chiefs' pass rush has been great this postseason. Against C.J. Stroud, they got a 54% pressure rate on him. Of course, a lot of that was late in the game. 8 sacks in that game, just crazy. 3 by George Karloftis. But what really stood out to me was the pressure rate against the Bills. They had a 43% pressure rate on Josh Allen. And Allen was the least sacked quarterback in the league this year. I mean, that offensive line in Buffalo is really, really good. Allen was never on his back this year, and the Chiefs got pressure on him consistently in that game, notably at the very end of the game and the play of the season on 4th and 5, immediate pressure. And we need to replicate that here again because, specifically in the postseason, Hurts has struggled considerably under pressure comparatively to when he is not under pressure. And those splits are always there, but they're pretty significant this postseason with Hurts. Because when
and
Hurts
this is another big change from the Eagles of Super Bowl 57 to this team.
Big time.
I'll let you get that and then I'll tag it. But that to me is a big change in the way the Eagles do business. And these stats that we're going to give are not indicative of a team that leads the NFL in time of possession.
Agreed. Okay? Exactly.
Right. You go first. I've got one. I'll tag you.
Well, Hurts this postseason, when he's not pressured, has an 81% completion percentage and a passer rating of 120. Now, I understand those are just a couple of numbers and passer rating is kind of convoluted, but it does illustrate he's been really good when not pressured. Well, when he has been pressured this postseason, a 45% completion percentage and a passer rating of 66. Basically, his numbers are completely sliced in half when he is under pressure. Now, like you said, this Eagles offensive line is very good, and they run the football. That helps keep pressure off of Hurts. But if you can try to contain the running game and then pressure Hurts in this passing game, he struggled when under pressure this postseason. So those are just the facts, and let's try to do that again here in the Super Bowl.
We'll close this way, and Matt, you and I talked about it, but to me it's the oddest stat of the Philadelphia Eagles. A team that's 14-3 in the regular season, 3 really good wins in the NFC tournament bracket. They have yielded on a team that's number 1 in the NFL in time of possession, 45 sacks.
Shocking, yeah.
Jalen Hurts has been sacked 38 times on a running team. But then when he was out and Pickett came in, he got sacked 4 times. And the cat McKee from Stanford comes in, he got sacked twice. It doesn't add up. Running teams that have time of possessions aren't 20th in the league in yielding sacks. And so that, countered with Hurts, is different under pressure now than he was 2 years ago. It's Barkley is pretty much everything at this point because you've got to do this in sequence. But to me, it's odd when you look at this Eagles team on this side of the ball.
And we talk a lot about the 2022 draft class. It's like our favorite thing to talk about because at this point it's a historic draft class, looking at what these guys have done since they got here in Kansas City, and all they've done is win playoff games and going for their third straight Super Bowl. But if you go back and talk to guys like Trent McDuffie specifically, and I'm sure others would say the same thing, about their first Super Bowl win, a lot of the defensive players were not happy about it because they gave up 35 points. And, yeah, they were a Super Bowl champion as a rookie, and they had this incredible season. And we know that we wouldn't have won the Super Bowl without them. But they were kind of salty about it. Like, we didn't feel like we did our part in that Super Bowl. Well, now they have a chance again to play the Eagles in the Super Bowl, and they have 3 years under their belt now. And I just have a feeling guys like George and Trent and Leo and Brian Cook, a lot of these defenders that were happy they won the Super Bowl but weren't happy with how the defense played collectively, they're pretty fired up for this one.
But we remember Nick Bolton scoop and score, the most underrated play of that game. We remember Colin Sanders' sack. He's here in town now. Never forget Colin Sanders' sack.
He's tweeting about us, too. He's like, I root for those guys from afar.
And after the punt return to give the Chiefs the lead, a 3-and-out to get Hurts off the field, the game changed.
Oh, yeah.
Let's hope that's coming up now. Again, we're going to post again from here in New Orleans later in the week. But for now, loving the gumbo. Loving the jambalaya. What did they call it? What you had?
I had seafood au gratin.
Seafood au gratin.
We'll find a beignet.
And we'll get our Dixies if we can get them exchanged, the currency exchange. Anyway, it's time to make history here in New Orleans.